idea that there should be public schools. The radicals basically in the country for a long time, including Fred Koch, who was David and Charles Koch's father, believed that the idea of public schools was basically communist or socialist, which is really ridiculous. Public schools are one of the basic innovations of America that has made our country strong and great to have universal public education for all kids.
Lisa, we have to leave it there. I thank you for being with us, Executive Director of the Center for Media and Democracy, and we will link to your report at democracynow.org as well, Juan. We'll link to your piece in the New York Daily News called Feds Failed to Keep Tabs on $3 billion in aid doled out to charter schools. That does it for our show. We have two job openings for video production fellowships beginning July 1st. Visit democracynow.org for details. Special thanks to Dennis Moynihan and Ann Tice in Denver, and to Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aramati, and Ramin Shakespeare Martinez. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, also heard on the web at www.kboo.fm. The time is 5 o'clock. Stay tuned for the Friday KBOO Evening News coming up next. And this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Multnomah County. With marriage equality, same-sex couples have new issues to consider, and you may qualify for additional Social Security and Medicare benefits. You can learn about your rights and how to avoid scams at the May 9th workshop from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Friendly House. Registration at eventbrite.com by typing LGBT Portland or at 503-224-2640.
KBOO would like to thank our community partners that donated food for our volunteers today. Lunch was provided by Hoda's Middle Eastern Cuisine at 3401 Southeast Belmont, serving Lebanese cuisine and Mother's Day brunch on Sunday from 11 to 9 p.m. with 12 mezza dishes and mimosas. Dinner was provided by DeNicholas's Italian Restaurant located at 3520 Southeast Powell. Family-owned and serving Italian cuisine.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of We the People Standing Together to Protect Our Climate, Lessons from the Community Rights Movement. Thursday, May 14th at 7 p.m. at the Elliott Chapel in the First Unitarian Church in Portland. Paul Cienfuegos is presenting this original speech and will lead a community conversation about the community rights movement and how civic engagement can lead to reclaiming the structures of law. Again, that's Paul Cienfuegos with We the People Standing Together to Protect Our Climate, Thursday, May 14th at 7 p.m. at the Elliott Chapel at the First Unitarian Church, 1011 Southwest 12th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on our hour-long Membership Drive special of the KBOO Evening News, the state legislature in Oregon votes to ban so-called gay conversion therapy.
Anti-nuclear activists launch a campaign to shut down the Columbia Generating Station as the plant prepares to offline for refueling tomorrow.
A local environmental activist is arrested for locking down at ART Logistics to protest President Obama's support for the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, May 8th, 2015. KBOO's currently in our membership drive. We'd like you to urge you to become a member. You can call 877-500-5266. I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Linda Olson-Osterland. A local environmental and labor activist was arrested today at the site of Portland's largest oil exporter. He was locked down to a cement barrel for nearly 24 hours before being arrested this morning. Tim Norgren, an AFL-CIO union member from Stevenson, Washington, decided to lock himself to a barrel on the tracks at the ARC Logistics Partners Portland Terminal in protest of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. The TPP has drawn attention from a broad coalition of local, labor, human rights, and climate change activists. Today, KBOO's Jenka Soderberg spoke with Jonah Majur of Portland Rising Tide about the action.
As you know, yesterday, Charlie Hales announced, probably for re-election reasons, that he is opposing the Pembina propane terminal. And, of course, Pembina said, well, we're actually going to go ahead and try and build this thing anyways, despite their comments that they would actually pull out of the terminal if the community here didn't want it, which obviously we don't. So we camped out overnight, and several of us slept on the tracks, and then many more kept coming in throughout the evening and into the early hours of the morning. And we kind of hung out until about, I guess, 9:30. And then the police all showed up at once, and many in unmarked vehicles. They had the explosives unit, which they used to extract him, with them already. And we took our camp down. We put all our sleeping bags away, moved the cars, and then they began the extraction process of him.
And why was ARC Logistics chosen as the location for this action?
Well, it's a crude oil by rail terminal on the Willamette River. The facility in 2011, I believe, leaked about 10 or 11,000 gallons of oil into the Willamette River. So it's kind of an aging facility. It's been around for a long time. And they are continuing operation. They went in under the radar of the public. There was no public process in approving this terminal's right to ship crude oil by rail, bringing in, you know, often explosive oil trains through our communities and contributing ultimately to climate change, which is our main issue because climate change affects us all, and it's the biggest crisis that humanity has ever had to face.
And what was the significance of this action at a time when President Obama was visiting Portland?
Well, we wanted Obama to know, as well as, more importantly, our local elected officials like Wyden, Blumenauer, et cetera, let them know that we're watching them. And when they claim to be, you know, progressives who stand up for the people and fight corporations and all that kind of stuff, and then they accept all this money from these wealthy corporations who stand directly to benefit from the Trans-Pacific Partnership, we also kind of wanted to bring back a little bit of the Little Beirut that was present back when H.W. Bush came to visit Portland. We feel like Portland has kind of become Portlandia a lot lately, so we want to kind of come back to the days of Little Beirut.
And that, I guess, referred to the militancy of some of the protesters who came out to oppose President Bush?
Yeah.
And so how is Tim? Is he, was he injured at all in the extraction from the barrel that he had locked himself down to?
No, he was not injured at all. They used it appeared to be like a hot saw is what Tim referred to it as. It was like a large grinder device, which they used to peel the outer contents of the barrel off. He was in super high spirits after they got him out and unclipped him from the inside, and he is really happy that he was able to take a stand against something as devastating as Trans-Pacific Partnership, as well as, you know, the climate change that it kind of entails.
I've been speaking again with Jonah Majur, who is with Portland Rising Tide, a group that organized a lockdown here at ARC Logistics in Portland, coinciding with the visit of President Obama beginning yesterday and continuing until this morning. This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO News.
The Oregon Senate today approved a bill to ban so-called ex-gay therapy for minors, also known as gay conversion therapy or reparative therapy, in which pseudoscientific methods are used to try to change a person's sexual orientation or gender identity. The bill passed the Senate with a 21-3 vote. It will bar all state-licensed professionals from subjecting minors to the harmful practice. Denounced as a, quote, act of violence by Senator Sarah Gelser, and sometimes literally involving violent acts such as painful electric shocks, conversion therapy has been debunked by every major mental health organization in the country. In summarizing her views, Senator Gelser went on to say unequivocally that sexual orientation is not a mental illness and should never be treated as such. Debate over the bill featured powerful testimony from many who had personally endured the experience. The National Center for Lesbian Rights, which lobbied in favor, thanked those who testified for their courage. They often had to recount humiliating and traumatic incidents in public, and in some cases even came face to face with their former tormentors. Other organizations which promoted the bill include Basic Rights Oregon and the Human Rights Campaign. It was championed by Representative Bob Nossi in the House. The bill now awaits the governor's approval. It passed in the House on March 17th, but there's little doubt that Kate Brown, an open bisexual, will sign it into law. After that happens, Oregon will join California, New Jersey, and Washington, D.C. as one of the few states to take such a step.
According to the Oregon Secretary of State's website, $250,000 has been raised by Portland school board candidates for this month's special election. The lion's share of this money was raised in Zone 3 with incumbent Bobby Reagan and Amy Constam both cracking the $100,000 mark. The other two candidates in Zone 3, Gretchen Hollins and Wes Soderbach, are not raising money. Unions are funding Reagan, with local electricians giving $3,000, teachers' voice in politics giving $2,000, and plumbers kicking in $1,200. Political types are also lending their financial support to Reagan. Julie Brim gave $10,000. Suzanne Bonamici, $1,000. Judy Shippark invested $900. And Portland Commissioner Steve Novick, Dan Salzman, and Nick Fish all ponied up at least $500. Morrell Inc. was Reagan's largest contributor with over $25,000 in donations. Ms. Constam has financial backing from business and building sectors, with Hilltop Public Solutions at the $5,000 level, Harsh Investments Properties investing $2,500, and Tom Walsh another $2,500. Current school board member Tom Kohler and Pam Knowles also invested a couple hundred in Ms. Constam. Greenlight Media was Ms. Constam's largest contributor with over $37,000 in donations. Here are each of the school board Zone 3 candidates on the question of money in their campaign.
I'm Wes Soderbach, and I'm running for Portland Public School Board District Number 3. My funding at the present time is my personal funds. Alternative source is tapping into personal friends. I don't take any money from anything that people that deal with the school district in a profit sense. Now, my biggest competition has a war fund of over $20,000, and she's a three-time incumbent. She's been there at the end of her term, will be 12 years, and she wants another 4 years. Money speaks, and money speaks loudly in politics.
I'm Bobby Regan, and I'm running for the Portland School Board, Zone 3. I have a political action campaign committee, the way that most board members or elected officials do as you're running for office. And the purpose of that is to allow your supporters and endorsers to support you in your race. This is going to be an incredibly low turnout election. And the way that we're going to be able to communicate to people typically is by sending them a mailer. And that costs money.
My name is Amy Constam. I'm running for Portland Public School Board in Zone 3. So I am running against a three-term incumbent. She served 12 years, so she's looking to serve 16 years, which is almost unprecedented for Portland Public Schools. And she has great capacity to raise money and put forth a real campaign. So I've never run for elected office, but I realized that I do need to raise money to do that. So my campaign is funded from donations, largely from parents in Portland Public Schools, and that is my strongest base of support. And I would tell you that absolutely that will influence me when I am on the board, because I always want to be open to parent input, and I've had the experience as a parent activist who has had a lot of engagement directly with the district, and it has informed a lot of my motivations about ways in which I think the district could improve.
This is Gretchen Hollins. I'm running for Portland Public School Board, Zone 3. I am not raising any money, and there are not going to be Gretchen Holland lawn signs anywhere. I don't want people to vote for me because they've seen a lawn sign or they recognize my name. I'm not asking for endorsements. I want people to vote for me because they believe that I will provide effective leadership at the school board level, and because they believe I deeply value education and want to make the changes that we need to make right now. We can't wait. PPS school enrollment is on the rise. The economy has picked up. The funding has stabilized. We can make changes right now, and I would like to make them. I've been in Portland Public Schools facilities for 7 years doing the heavy lifting there. I am ready to move to a leadership position and make some big improvements at that level. Money in politics is the problem.
Those were the voices of school board candidates.
Those were the voices of board candidates in Zone 3. Ms. Regan and Ms. Constam have raised over $100,000 each. Mr. Soderback and Ms. Hollins are not raising money. To learn more about the school board candidates, visit KABU's handy audio election guide at kabu.fm/PPS2015. Ballots are due May 19th.
KABU volunteers have stepped up their game to bring you this locally produced newscast every evening. Now we're asking you to do the same. And Lisa is joining us now to tell you more.
Hey, and I am Lisa Loving. This is KABU Community Radio. This is our fabulous spring membership party. And we're inviting you to come in person to 20 Southeast 8th in Portland, Oregon, right now. And empty out your wallet on the table, man, or you could call 877-500-5266. Make a contribution. You know, we've been talking about money, and you just heard a bunch of stuff about the Portland Public Schools school board race and how people are fundraising. I want to throw some money numbers at you, too. All of KABU's 2015 expenses only equal $771,000. We are such a cheap date. We don't even cost $1 million. That's amazing. If you do come in person to 20 Southeast 8th, put some money on the table. You could take a tour and see how far we make your dollar go. It's amazing. And I want to issue a challenge. This is going to be my theme for this show. It only costs $88 an hour to run KABU. So I'm going to ask people to make a contribution of $88. Give us a call, 877-500-5266. $88. You're paying an entire hour of KABU content, KABU staff, KABU volunteers, KABU electricity, everything, the dog food. We've got a little bowl. You can come down here with your doggy dog. Now, $88, that's only what? That's less than $7.50 a month. Come on. We need to make the phone rings. We need to have you make an investment in this radio station. 877-500-5266. Do it online. Contribute securely online at kboo.fm. Show our fabulous news volunteers, and they're volunteers, by the way, right? Not making those big checks, right? Show our volunteers how much you respect the work they've done learning how to do this news broadcast. I'm putting this out to you. What do you think is the future of news? 10 years from now, how do you think you're going to be taking in news? Okay, I'm saying when you make a call, 877-500-5266, You're actually making an investment in the future of our entire Cascadia bioregion by supporting this kind of programming, because my theory is it's people like people who are in this building right now that are going to be making the news 5 years from now, 10 years from now, people who are going to be innovating, and that could be you, okay? So if you come in person to make a contribution, 20 Southeast 8th, right, in Portland, Oregon, look around. Look at this equipment. You could be learning that. And guess how much it costs? It doesn't cost anything. That's why we're asking people to make a contribution to float our boat. Let's float the boat, dude. So 877-500-5266. Come in person. We're at 20 Southeast 8th or online, kboo.fm. Let's go back to the news. Thanks for listening.
As the drought in California continues, with scientists there saying the state is potentially experiencing a permanent change in climate, Oregon is also experiencing a drought. It's not as severe as the one in California, but nearly two-thirds of the state of Oregon is now considered to be in the category extreme drought. Let me say that again, extreme drought. This drought has worsened over the past week, and all but the northwest corner of the state, where Portland is located, is affected by it. The U.S. Drought Monitor has a six-level scale: no drought, abnormally dry, moderate, severe, extreme, and exceptional drought. Two-thirds of California is in the extreme or exceptional category of drought. In Oregon, Governor Kate Brown has declared drought emergencies in seven counties, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture has made 20 counties eligible for drought disaster assistance. This is the fourth straight year of drought for the state, with a record warm winter for each of the past 2 years and a record low snowpack on Oregon peaks this winter.
The only nuclear plant in the Pacific Northwest, the Columbia Generating Station, is going offline tomorrow for the first time in 2 years for a routine refueling. But a number of citizens and environmental groups hope the plant will stay offline for a lot longer than the few days that are scheduled, possibly forever. The groups call for a public hearing to demand that a crack in the jet pump at the generator be fixed. KBOO's Jenka Soderberg has more.
A crack in the jet pump at the Columbia Generating Station, located on the Hanford nuclear site, is worrisome to environmentalists, anti-nuclear activists, and nuclear engineer familiar with the situation. But the company that runs the plant says there's no cause for concern. John Dobkin, a spokesperson for Energy Northwest, told KBOO that the crack was first reported in 2001 and is checked every 2 years when the site goes offline for refueling. He would not go on record and said he was concerned that KBOO was getting information from people who don't actually know the situation, which, according to him, has not changed in the last 14 years. Several weeks ago, Energy Northwest applied to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission for an exemption to a rule that requires them to repair the cracking when it reaches a certain size. Dobkin said this is a routine notification which occurs every 2 years when the company is preparing for refueling. Paul Gunter of Beyond Nuclear claims that the company has chosen to address the problem by adding more hydrogen to the water to try to stop the crack from growing. He says this is insufficient.
They want to bypass this kind of thorough inspection. They don't want to look at other parts. They don't want to even really look at the jet pump itself, but just go on past experience. And again, that's a little like driving your car through the rearview mirror. You can't really judge what's ahead by what you've experienced in the past. And so they really should be required to do a full-scale and thorough inspection using state-of-the-art ultrasonic testing, for example.
Local residents who have become aware of the crack on the jet pump have called on Energy Northwest to keep the Columbia nuclear generator offline until this issue is addressed. Miriam German, a local resident who founded Radcast.org, notified KBOO about this issue and is hoping to pressure the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to require the company to repair this crack.
The problem with the Columbia Generating Station, aside from the fact that it's a nuclear power plant and we shouldn't have any nuclear power plants running at all in the United States or in the world, is that it is, by its own design, a flawed design. And instead of us dealing with the fact that we have something that can hurt all of us in Cascadia, we allowed the relicensing of this nuclear power plant to occur in 2010 instead of when it was supposed to be looked at to be relicensed in 2023. So that's really early. And to do that and not inspect it first for things like this particular crack in the jet pump is just dangerous to all of us. What this does, this particular corrosion in the jet pump, it's a crack where water flows through this and it cools the plant, it cools the fuel rods, and it has to pump water in a certain capacity and keep everything on an even keel so that heat doesn't build up and then explode, melt down, etc. Think Fukushima. This really is our Fukushima, and aside from the fact that it's on 11 fault lines, we have this crack that we now know about. Now, if you went to look up this crack online, you wouldn't find it. And this is part of the problem. We, the people, are not told how endangered we are and everything living in Cascadia by Energy Northwest, who owns the plant, or the NRC, who is supposed to be overseeing the plant and how it's running. So where we're at right now with this crack is we found out that this crack is real. When we also found out that Energy Northwest, or CGS, has written a letter to the NRC asking the NRC to allow it to continue to move forward as if everything is fine.
That was Miriam German of radcast.org. Other groups have also voiced concern and are asking the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to keep the Columbia Generating Station at Hanford offline indefinitely when it's powered down tomorrow for refueling, in order to conduct more in-depth inspections. For KBOO News, I'm Jenka Soderberg.
There is only so much on in the ground. Sooner or later, there won't be much around. Tell that to your kids while you're driving around downtown.
Producers of natural gas may be venting off millions of dollars in methane and natural gas fuels during their extraction processes. A recent study from a U.S. Oversight Committee found that natural gas operations in the U.S. are under-monitored and regulated. As companies extract, store, and transport natural gas, some of the gases are vented openly into the atmosphere. The government has guidelines of acceptable venting, but the review finds that not only are rates not being reported correctly, but that the government has also failed to monitor many high-priority sites. The oversight body charges that it has been telling the Bureau of Land Management since 2010 that up to 40% of vented methane could be economically captured and sold. Methane released into the atmosphere has a shorter lifespan than CO2 gases. However, methane is considered to be up to 84 times more dangerous than CO2 over a 20-year span because it is better at holding in heat. Current estimates suggest that there is enough natural gas deposits to last consumption for the next 100 years. However, the environmental impact of removing that gas may mean that it is ultimately no cleaner than coal.
A bill has landed on the desk of Hawaiian Governor Mark Ige that sets Hawaii to become the first American political body to commit to 100% renewable electrical energy production. On signing the bill into law, Ige will set Hawaii on the path to becoming completely free of non-renewable electric energy production by the year 2045. If Ige doesn't act to veto it, the bill will become law on May 15th. Hawaii relies on oil-fired plants for its current electrical production. Those plants rely on imported oil, making Hawaii's electricity cost three times the national average. Hawaii currently has solar panel units installed on 1 in 8 of residential roofs. It gets 10% of its electricity from solar power. Hawaii's transition to solar power has seen some resistance from the state's three main electric utilities, including notices to suspend connection of newly installed solar panels to the country's grid. The Hawaiian Public Service Committee has weighed in on the issue, telling the utilities that they have a duty to make those connections in a timely manner. The utilities also have charged high interconnection fees and surcharges on customers who have participated in net metering, which allows for selling excess electricity to the utilities. Hawaii is expected to become a testing ground for the integration of renewable generation techniques into existing power grids over the coming years.
You are listening to a membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. We volunteers work hard every day to bring you coverage of local, national, and international news. Please take a moment to show your support. Joining us now is Lisa Loving to talk about exactly how you can show that support to KBOO Community Radio.
Okay, you're giving us a call, ba 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 ba. You're calling us on the phone, ba 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 ba. Cause it's the spring membership drive, bom, bom, bom. 877-500-5266. Sounds great. Bom, bom, bom. No, really, you need to give us a call. We're over here. We're having a great time. We'd love it if you came in person. We're at 20 Southeast 8th in Portland. Again, that number, 877-500-5266. Make a contribution to this awesome radio station. It is an awesome radio station. How awesome is this radio station? You know, years ago when Katrina happened, we dedicated one entire day of our membership drive that year to help, what is it called? The New Orleans Heritage Jazz Community Radio Stations in New Orleans rebuild because they lost everything, right? We shared our pledge drive with them. And then this year, we live broadcast the New Orleans Jazz Festival through them. They're our friends. Did you know that we had friends? Other radio stations are our friends. When you give us a call, 877-500-5266, make a contribution. I'm saying that you should contribute $88. I'm putting that out, $88. You actually join a community of people. You do. You join a community of people. It's not just you sitting in your vehicle or your living room or in front of your computer listening to people yak. There's actually a whole community of us. It is an us thing. And we're all over here. We're all over the place. And, you know, the other thing I was thinking of was when 9/11 happened, people just came to this building because we were all so shocked and we wanted to be together. Even people that we didn't know came to this building. We opened up the doors and we all came in. We did programming and we supported each other, right? 877-500-5266. KBOO Community Radio is a community and we support each other, right? We have businesses that are business members. And also, if you make a contribution of $75 or more, you get to have a tree planted by Friends of Trees in addition to your regular thank you gift. Allow me to suggest that you should ask for the audio flash drive for a $75 minimum pledge, right? So I'm Lisa. I've been volunteering here for years. I came here when I was young. No, I